You're listening to a Zone Radio podcast. Zoneradio.co.za. That's Medicine Head. Great at singing, not that good at maths. One and one is one, apparently. The time is 11 minutes past 4, and it's time for this week's Entrepreneur Zone. And with me back in the studio is Steve Reed. Hello, Steve. How are you?
Hello, Richard. I am very well, thank you. Hello, listeners.
And I'll leave you to introduce your guest because we know him.
Alrighty. Well, it is my privilege, listeners. 2 weeks ago, I spoke about patenting and various aspects of patenting. But I am by no stretch of the imagination an expert in that field. But we do have an expert in the field today to talk about that. And he is very well acquainted with Zone Radio, John McKnight from Spoor and Fisher. And John, I thought it'd be lovely just, maybe you've done this before, but I certainly don't know you, outside of the role that you have here as a presenter. Hmm. So tell us a bit about the man behind the name.
Thank you, Steve. It's very nice to see you again. Good afternoon, Unicorn. It's always good to see you. Thanks, Steve. So my name's John. I live in the Valley. I'm in my late 50s. I've got a profound love of music. It's always been a part of my life from very early on. I've got a couple of elder sisters, and they were very instrumental. When they left for university, they left their records behind, and I used to while away the hours when I was a lightie listening to Hot Rocks by the Rolling Stones and Hot August Night and things like that. So that's kind of how I got into the music, and I've just carried it with me all through my life. I studied to it, and I've done a fair amount of studying. And it's how I met my wife, and it's still a big part of my life, but at home and also here at the station. So, you know, a year ago when I knocked on the door and I was introduced to the Unicorn, it opened a huge chapter in that he allowed me to sort of share my interest and my love of music with the good folk of the Deep South. So it was a fantastic opportunity this time last year to meet the Unicorn and to be given the opportunities I've been given to share what I love doing with the folk of the good South. So that's me and sort of how I ended up here. As I say, the opportunities that Richard has afforded both me and dozens and dozens, hundreds of others is incredible. And we will always be very, very grateful for that. So that's how we are where we are today. In terms of, being a patent attorney, I think, I was at university studying a science degree. And I went to the careers and counseling unit at WITS. Okay. And in those days, we did those big old tests where you had those tickets that you had to color in the blocks and things. And now it would be all online. But in those days, it was a big, long questionnaire. And I took it back to RES and I took a few days to do it. And then they put it into the computer and then called me back a week later. And they had a big, thick printout of, you know, on those dot matrix printers about who they thought I would be. And they said, well, you're a very unusual young man in the sense that you have some degree of we wouldn't call it excellence, but competence in science. No Nobel Prizes for you, young man, but you'll probably graduate your BSc. And they were right, by the skin of my teeth, but they were right. Okay. And then they said, somewhat unusually for somebody who's got some competence in science, you've also got equal competence in languages, which is not something we see every day. So if you were to do a BA or something like that, you would probably be okay. But again, no, there's no Pulitzer Prizes in the mix for you on that side of the spectrum either. But it's an unusual combination on that basis to have an understanding of science and to have an understanding of language. And so we think that there's a career for you, and that is patent law.
Okay.
And so they went to the bookcase, and they had all these thick lever arch files on civil engineers and doctors and accountants. And there was this tiny little file and had in small font on the spine, patent attorney. And so I thought, well, I like the look of that before we even begin.
There's not a lot
of people out there like that. So anyway, long story short, phoned the old man back at home and said, hey, Dad, how do you feel about paying for a couple of years of LLB after I finish my science? And he was a bank manager, so he knew a few patent attorneys in Durban. And he said to me, yeah, that's okay. That won't be a problem. So And then he arranged for me to spend a day with a patent attorney in Durban. And that was a fantastic day, a fantastic morning. Again, it was the 80s. Things were very different then. But I was ushered into a wood paneled office. When there were lots of papers on the desk. That hasn't changed. But every hour on the hour, a gorgeous secretary would totter in a pencil skirt and bring us coffee and tea. And I thought, this is something I could get used to. Yeah? this might be the career for me after all. Again, massive misrepresentation. Now we have touchdown stations and you make your own coffee.
Yeah, yeah.
But back in the day, that was definitely part of the deal. So long story short, the old man was keen. I liked what I saw. And yeah, and so finished my BSc, studied my law, did my articles. And found myself here as a partner in Spruan Fisher. Spruan Fisher is a firm that only does intellectual property. We don't do divorces. We don't do drunk driving under the influence or in the States or anything like that. We are just intellectual property. That's what we focus on.
Fantastic. Before we pursue that a little bit, I just wanted to take note of two things that you said.
Mm.
One, that Richard has opened up lots of opportunities to many people. And thank you, Richard, for the same thing on my side. But you went on to say how there were some enablers for you as a young man to kind of find your direction.
Oh, absolutely.
And perhaps there, you know, people are writing matric, etc. Perhaps that's not a bad thing to remind folk that sometimes having a conversation with someone who's in the field, going to the office, maybe you won't get served coffee by a lady in a
pencil skirt,
but maybe that's just the right kind of thing to help you clarify what you want to do. So thank you for sharing that, John, and thank you, Richard. Last week, I spoke a bit about patenting.
Mm.
I wondered if you can pick up the refrain and carry on a bit more, please, John. That would be great.
So I heard the show last week and you were spot on, Steve. So allow me to stand on the shoulders of giants this afternoon.
That's another person, but thank you. I appreciate that.
So a young entrepreneur, indeed any entrepreneur, will be faced with a bewildering array of challenges. And so I will try and demystify intellectual property, which is only one of the hurdles that they will have to overcome. But I want to begin by saying that intellectual property exists in a number of forms, and it is almost definite that an entrepreneur will have at least one of these different kinds of intellectual property, and that he will have created. All right, so they are what I refer to as the big five. So, you know, in our game reserves, we have the big five.
Yeah.
There is the big five in intellectual property. And they are, in no particular order, patents, trademarks, registered designs, copyright, and then what's called confidential information or know-how. Mm. And I can assure you that every entrepreneur out there will have at least one of those, quite possibly more.
Sure.
So let's unpack those. First of all, the first three that I mentioned, patents, trademarks, and designs, you don't get those until you get assistance from an attorney and you actually have to register your rights with the patent office, with the designs office, with the trademarks office, which is all administered under what we call CIPSI, or it is the Companies and Intellectual Properties Commission, and they are based in Pretoria.
Same place where you register your business.
Yeah, exactly. It's all under the same roof. It's all online now. I mean, back in the day in the 80s, we would have to go down there and search the records manually, but it's all online now, but it is run through them. So you don't get a patent until you have applied for it and it has been granted by the authorities.
Okay.
And you will need, certainly for a patent, you'd absolutely need an attorney, a patent attorney in particular, to do that. And for trademarks and copyright, it is trademarks and registered designs, it is advisable to use a patent attorney and or even just an attorney. And on that point, I should just make this point early on. So a patent attorney is a protected title in South Africa. You cannot call yourself a patent attorney unless and until you have written a bunch of specialist exams which are rendered by the South African Institute of Intellectual Property. So not any attorney can register your patent, only patent attorneys.
Mm.
And to be a patent attorney, you have to have A, a technical degree, So you need to have a BSc or an engineering degree or something like that. Then you need to have a law degree. Hmm. Then you need to have served articles, written the general bar exam, been admitted as an attorney, and then written the specialist institute exams. Hmm. So it takes a while to get there, and only patent attorneys can prepare and file patent applications. So what does this mean? It means they're expensive, right? Well, they tend to be, okay, because it took them about a decade to qualify. No. But an entrepreneur should not be put off by that, because every patent attorney will, without doubt, receive you and give you a couple of minutes of their time, free, gratis, and for nothing. The first consultation should be free. And if,
absolutely.
And but you just have that conversation. But almost every patent attorney I know will be pleased to receive an entrepreneur, look at what they've done, and give them some advice and say, listen, if you'd like a patent, it's going to take this long, it's going to cost this much, and we'll do what we can. So there are no surprises. So all entrepreneurs should not be afraid to lift up the phone and speak to an attorney. You will not get whacked for fees off the bat. They will have a look at your idea, give you some advice, and give you an idea of cost so that you can build that into your business plan. So that's a very important thing to understand for anybody setting out on this journey. Hmm. Okay, patents. So patents, again, you need the advice of a patent attorney, but they basically protect how things work. They protect inventions, and an invention is a surprising or non-predictable solution to a problem. And that problem can be anything from how to catch a mouse more efficiently to the latest generation of HIV pharmaceuticals or an extractive process for mines or anything like that. So an invention is a solution to a problem. Mm. Okay. And the philosophy behind a patent is that a government incentivizes its citizens to solve problems. And when you do solve a problem in a way that has not been described before, in a way that is new, and in a way that is not obvious, which is not predictable, then the government is very grateful to you for providing that solution, and in return, they give you a 20-year monopoly on that solution. Yeah. They give you 20 years to be the only guy to practice that solution and enjoy the fruits of your labor. That's the philosophy behind a patent. You've made a contribution to society. In return, you get a limited monopoly on it. After your 20 years, it's public domain. Anybody and everybody can use it.
Sure.
But for those 20 years, it's yours. And we'll speak a little bit about just how you can lever that monopoly, because a lot of people think, oh, it's just me and I've got to get out there and sell product. It's not. When you have that monopoly, there are a lot of ways to lever it to the advantage of your business. And I'll come back to that after I've discussed the other four.
Amazing.
Yeah,
please.
Okay, so trademarks. Trademarks are, and I don't want to use the word simply because that'll offend all of my trademark attorney partners, but basically trademarks are badges of origin, as you mentioned in your previous one. And that is the thing, the name that you call something, right? And it serves to distinguish your goods from those, so from other people. Zone Radio, Coke versus Pepsi, Cadbury's versus Beacon when it comes to chocolate. So that's what it's saying. Now, you can imagine that when you've been in business for a while and you've acquired distinction in the marketplace, just how valuable a trademark can be. Mm. But it's not valuable on day one, but every day that you continue to trade and every day that you establish reputation, your trademark increases in value.
Fantastic.
So a trademark should be acquired sooner rather than later. It should be nurtured. It should be managed, because it will be a principal point of value or asset to your business in due course. The longer you trade, the more it's worth. So that's trademarks. Trademarks are probably the most ubiquitous of all the intellectual property species, and because they're just so common. Not everybody has a patent, but almost everybody has a trademark. Registered designs cover the appearance, the aesthetics of industrially produced article. So it would be anything from the shape of your shampoo bottle, a bar of soap, a wing mirror on your car, a water dispenser, anything like that. So they are the domain of big companies, you know. So the car spare parts are protected by registered design. Unilever, Procter & Gamble, they protect all of their packaging by way of registered design, et cetera, like bottles and things like that. So registered designs can be useful, can be very, very powerful tools, but again, they're not everybody's cup of tea. So patents, trademarks, and registered designs, they all have to be registered, right? You don't just get it. You have to go and fill in a form and provide representations and, or, you know, define your invention or set out a representation of your trademark, pay your money, and get your rights. The other two, copyright and trade secrets, well, they just exist upon creation of the work. So copyright protects work of an artistic nature. So that would be anything from poems and songs, as you mentioned, but also things like package inserts, the artwork on a package, your advertising material, your website these days, how you've laid out your page, the colors you use, the words you use to describe yourself. These are all literary works of art.
Yeah.
No literary merit is required to get copyright. So it's very important. It can be a really rubbish artwork, but if it's yours and it's original and you created it, you have the right to stop others copying it. Yeah. Hence the term copyright. It's your right to stop others copying it.
Okay,
so that's copyright. And then, of course, the last one, which is also an extremely common one, is confidential information. And that can be anything from how you make something behind closed doors to a black box of what happens inside. Nobody knows. You put in an egg, out comes an omelet. What happens inside the black box? Well, you're going to have to die wondering, kind of thing. Mm. All of that is confidential information, hugely valuable. But also things like your little black book of contacts, who to call in this situation, my favorite customer, all of these things. So, and these are principal points of value for a business. And copyright, confidential information is only of value while it remains confidential, right? Mm. So as soon as it becomes public domain, sorry for you, there goes your asset. So you have to look after it very, very carefully. Okay. And probably the most famous example of confidential information is the recipe for Coca-Cola, right? Nobody knows it. Lots and lots of people have tried to reverse engineer Coke over the years. Nobody's got it right. That's because Coke is just a swampy marsh of sugars and long chain polysaccharides and all things like that. It gunks up all the analysis machines to try and get it right. People have come close, but nobody really knows what's in Coke. That is a hugely valuable piece of information for entrepreneurs. So an entrepreneur, when he starts out on his journey, if he has solved a technical problem, it might well be patentable. Whatever he calls the product or his business is a trademark. If he's making a mass-produced article and it's got an interesting shape or an interesting aesthetic, he could have a registered design. His website, his manuals, his pamphlets, his instruction manuals, all good things, his packaging is all copyright protected, and then how he does things and things that not everybody knows, confidential information. So,
fantastic. Mm. You spoke about that it's possible to leverage that. Talk to us a little bit more, because that sounds really good information.
It's a really interesting aspect of intellectual property, and one that is really not concentrated on enough. I call it monetization of your IP, and it's basically show me the money, right? It's great. I've got this fantastic certificate now to say that I've got a patent. Great. I've got the right to exclude others from doing my invention for the next 20 years. What am I going to do with it? Okay. You've got several options as an entrepreneur as to what you're going to do with your patent, with your trademark, or whatever. The first is, and the one that almost everybody thinks of, is that, well, I'm going to use it myself, right? I'm going to make this mousetrap, and nobody else can make this mousetrap, and nobody else can compete with me. And that's called operating in the space, right? Which is exactly what it is. You've cornered off this little area of the technical platform of mousetraps, and nobody else can make it. That's cool. But can you make enough of them? Can you make them in all the countries? Can you distribute them all around the country? If you've got your patent filed in America, can you make them in America? Can you meet demand? Okay. And that's when the second one comes in, which is allowing others to use your invention for a small fee, of course, and that is licensing. Okay, so that's when you say to somebody else, yeah, sure, you can make my mousetrap, you can sell my mousetrap, you can do it in Kenya, or you can do it in Gauteng, you can do it for 5 years, you can do it for 10 years, et cetera, et cetera. But for each mousetrap that you make and sell, 10%. You're going to pay me
whatever.
10%. Okay, so we say 10%, right? And then there's all sorts of questions, well, 10% of what? Is that 10% of recommended retail price? Is it 10% of cost of goods?
Yeah.
Is it 10% of the X factory price? Hmm. What about discounts? What about returns? You can see how this is going to amuse a patent attorney for a long time, all of these questions, right? But licensing is licensing, and it basically means that at the end of the day, somebody else does the heavy lifting, and you just get a little slice of the pie. And it's normally between 5 and 10%, as you say, of an X factory price. Hmm. So that's licensing. Great stuff. Okay, next one.
Another lever. Here we go.
Another lever. Here we go. Collateralization. Okay, it's an asset. Last week in your show, you mentioned that it's property. It's like a house or a car. Well, almost all of us have bonded our house, haven't we? Mm. So the bank owns it, and they've given you a ton of cash, which you have to pay back, fair enough, but it's collateral against a loan, right?
Yes.
So when you've got a patent and a trademark and a few other bits and bobs of intellectual property, that has value, and banks will recognize that value. And if you put it together in a package that a bank will recognize and understand, then they will grant you a loan using your intellectual property as a collateral.
Hmm.
So collateralization of intellectual property is big business out there, all right?
Is that something that a patent attorney can help them with?
We can certainly put you in the right direction. Unfortunately, as clever as I think I am, I know that I don't rule the world, and it is, in fact, accountants who rule the world.
Not Pinky in the brain.
So we know a couple of good accountants, right? Yes. Every patent attorney will be tight with a couple of accountants, and we will definitely put you in their direction. And so accountants are really good. Certainly the big accountant firms, they will have IP valuing units who will be able to look at your IP, put a number on it, and that holds some sway with the bank as to how much you could hope to get when you collateralize your intellectual property.
Wonderful. Second lever. Is there a third?
There is a third. That is what if you license. So it's kind of contingent on licensing.
Yeah.
But so if you license and you have a revenue stream, and you've locked down a licensee for 5 years or 10 years or whatever, and he's going to pay you a certain amount every month, because a lot of licenses are actually built on what's called minimum performance, because you don't want to let a guy say, you fall for his stories, I'll make a million mousetraps a year, I'll make you a lot of money, and then he does nothing.
Yeah.
You know, you need to say to him, well, a million mousetraps sounds like a great idea, but how about you pay me for 100,000, whether you make one or whether you make 100,000,
yeah.
You've got to pay me at least 100,000. So that's called a minimum performance, which you always bake into license agreements, right? So you know that you're going to be getting at least a certain amount every year based on these license agreements that you've concluded. And you might have several license agreements, right? You might have one in the US, in Europe, Australia, Japan. So you've got all of this revenue streams coming in here. You can package that to a bank and forward sell that. And sort of package it as a bond to say, I get R1 million a year in royalties. I'll cede that to the bank for the next 5 years for $5 million cash now. And that'll give you a cash injection, which can be very helpful for your business.
Mm.
And I'll give you an example of that. Something called a Bowie bond. Okay. So David Bowie, he's such an incredible guy, such a clever guy. But like almost all artists, he learned the hard way, and he didn't own the copyright in his first couple of albums, which are Starman and Life on Mars and all of those great ones, right? He didn't own it.
Sure.
This dodgy management company did. But he did own his subsequent stuff, right? So he packaged it all together, and he sold it to Wall Street as what was called a Bowie bond. And he said, and these figures are approximate, they're not gospel, but it was basically along the lines of, I get $5 million a year in royalties, $5 million US. I'll sell you 10 years worth of royalties now. And in that 10 years, I undertake to release a new album, a greatest hits album, and do at least one world tour.
Sure.
So to keep interest in my records up, right? So, and you give me $50 million now. The bank said, hey, it's David Bowie, where do we sign?
Yeah.
They did it. What did Bowie do with his 50 bar? He didn't sniff it up off the coffee table. He went and he bought the copyright in his first five albums, right?
Sure.
So then he reestablished his revenue stream for the next 10 years, just like he was, okay? And then at the end of the 10 years, he got his original copyright back, and now he had doubled his revenue because he was able to I don't want to use the word collateralize because it's not the right word, but he was able to sort of lever his future revenue streams on that basis. And so at the end of 10 years, he was doubly wealthy because he had prudently used the money that he was able to get up front. Bankers were very happy as well because they weren't earning $5 million at the end of their – they were earning $5 million at 8% compounded for 10 years. So they did very well out of the deal. Everybody wins. So that's another common way. But you've got to have baked in revenue streams before you can lever them. And then at the end there's a few sort of ancillary levers that we can pull, and that is – that when you have intellectual property, you suddenly find yourself having friends. It's the most amazing thing. People want to be with you, right? So you can talk about joint ventures. You can talk about incubators. You can talk about, co-ownership, or suddenly if you've got something that somebody else wants, then you can swap it for something that they might have, which can augment your product offering. So when you've got IP, you've got chips that you can swap and buy and sell and lever on the sort of platforms, in joint ventures and incubators and all things like that. So people want to be your friend when you have something that they want. You know?
Lovely. John, let's close by perhaps opening up the thought, like you have done, that maybe existing business owners, entrepreneurs, should take another look at what they have and maybe say, oh, maybe I'm overlooking value that's there, and I need to take a refresh look at that and how I can monetize that, how I can add value to that.
Absolutely.
So what would you say to someone who is, well, you've sparked something in me, John. How do they go about engaging? I don't know if it's fine with you to share your contact details.
Sure. So this is a quite a common request, and it's called an IP audit, where we go in and we have a look at a company and say, listen, you've got trademarks here that you haven't registered. And, you know, that's value. So trademarks are great because they're a line item on a balance sheet, right? They can be valued per se. You can add value overnight to your balance sheet by identifying, recording, and then valuing your trademarks. But it's also other things like, what's your R&D department looking like? What's coming down the line? You know, what's going to happen technically to your firm the day after tomorrow?
An IP audit.
IP audit.
IP audit.
And any IP firm will do that for you. But, of course, we have a whole department who does it. We are, as I mentioned earlier, we're tight with the bean counters when it comes to valuations. Sorry, our accountants. I must be nice to them. They rule the world. We can offer a very turnkey solution to sort of unlocking value which might be embedded in a business on the basis of intellectual property. And that's www.spoor.com, and you have a look at the team on there. You just give us a ring. We're in Cape Town. We're in Joburg, and we're very, very happy to talk to you. And as I say, the first consultation is not going to cost you a bean. So, you know, we'd love to meet you, talk to you, and see how we can help.
So it may be that entrepreneurs and business owners are sitting on unrecognized assets, wealth that they have not yet leveraged.
Absolutely.
And an IP audit could be the way to begin, or a conversation with your firm or other patent attorneys could open that up.
Yeah, absolutely, without doubt. Because once you know you've got it, then you can manage it properly. And then, of course, that unlocks the value.
Fantastic. John, one final sentence from you. And that is, what would you say in... Yeah, we are closing in on the end of 2024. Entrepreneurs, it's a bit like my former boss, Alan Ray, says, it's like playing Monopoly, but with no dice, and you never pass go. You know, it can become tiring and exhausting.
Yeah.
What encouragement would you give to business owners and entrepreneurs out there?
So it's funny. The unicorn and I were just talking the other day, and it's a story that I come across, is that McDonald's don't make the best burger in the world, right? But they are phenomenally successful. And why is that? It's because they are reliable, because they show up every day. And you know that when you go into McDonald's, you are going to get the same burger in Joburg, in Cape Town, in London, in New York. They are reliable, they work hard, and they rock up. They pitch up every single day. Mm. And that's what an entrepreneur has to do. Don't worry that you are not shooting out the lights, that you are not an Elon Musk and you don't have the next X platform or SpaceX or Tesla. Rock up. Put your head down. Hard work. That is what you need to do. Reliability tops all.
Fantastic. All right. That's such a lovely way to finish up, Richard. Thank you so much, John.
I have a question here, John. Do you handle international, your company or yourself, handle international registration of trademarks?
Yes, we do.
And the best way that the person can get hold of you is via the website?
Yeah, via the website. Okay. You hit www.spoor.com and you can look me up there.
Okay.
And then have a word with me or email me. My email address is there as well. And if I'm not the right guy for the job, and this is very important, because IP is so specialized, like I said, there's patents, there's designs, there's trademarks. If you talk to me, I will make sure that your paperwork and you become come before the gaze of the correct person for the job. We're a big firm. We've got everybody who knows what they're doing in their respective areas.
Fantastic.
Thank Such you very much, advice. John. And as always, thank you very, very much, Steve. Look forward to 2 weeks' time. What have you got in two weeks' time?
We're going to be talking about being a silverpreneur.
Okay. I'll wait for 2 weeks to find out what that is. Steve, John, thank you very, very much for your time this afternoon. Really is appreciated.